Today's episode of Rob is a Podcast is sponsored by CISO. CISO is the place for comedy. It's comedy for comedy nerds by comedy nerds. I think we have a few comedy nerds on this season of Survivor. I think that they would be okay with that. Maybe they all check out CISO. CISO, that's S-E-E-S-O, is the new ad-free streaming service bringing you hilarious original series, handpicked classics, weeks of stand-up specials, and more. Bingeable comedy anytime, anywhere. CISO. They've got every episode of SNL, including the new episodes the day after they air, Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon, Late Night with Seth Meyers the day after, and classics like 30 Rock, Parks and Rec, and Saved by the Bell. Even British comedies, too. If you're serious about comedy, you have to try CISO. Stream it anytime, anywhere, on virtually any device. It's ad-free and just $3.99 a month. So right now, our listeners can try CISO free for 2 months with promo code RHAP at checkout. Shows you can't find anywhere else from acclaimed series like Take My Wife and Harmon Quest. All 40 years of SNL, CISO is the only place that offers every episode they ever made and the new episodes the day after they air. Just go to CISO.com right now. That's S-E-E-S-O. Get 2 months free with the promo code RHAP at checkout. That's CISO.com, promo code RHAP. Coming to you live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast, and now here's the guy who's ready to talk millennials versus Gen X for the final time until TEOS Volume 4, Rob Cesternino. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the podcast. I'm very excited because even though it's not the Wiggle Room, Josh Wiggler is here, too.
In the room.
In
the flesh. You're really not going to talk about millennials versus Gen X again until 2020?
I mean, I'll talk about it, but this is the last podcast.
Official millennials versus Gen X.
You know,
it's
not even, because I'll do it like postseason interviews with different people.
Yeah. Those will be great. Oh, I can't wait.
All right. Scratch that.
Rob, you'll never stop working. This is your fate for the rest of your life.
No, and that's fine. At some point, eventually, I'll stop talking about millennials versus Gen X as a podcast.
Sure. Fair enough.
So, Josh, here we are. It's the day after the Survivor finale. Just sort of like in some moments of self-reflection today, I'm realizing that not one of my favorite days of the year.
Really?
Yeah.
It's the day after the finale, or the finale itself?
No, it's just there's still a lot of work to do, and I'm sort of at diminished capacity at times like that. Well, it's just, it's a long night, especially to go out to the finale, which was very fun. I'm sure we'll trade some stories about that in a few moments, but it's just like, it's a long night, and then it's a quick turnaround, and I thought that today was going to be better because I wasn't going to do exit interviews over the phone this morning, but no, it was just as rough getting going this morning.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't know. At least I feel like your exit interviews are going to be better if you could. This is my philosophy on it from somebody who does exit interviews as well. I feel like I love going to the finale because it's really, really fun, but also I feel like the quality of the exit interviews for the final episode of the season are going to be better if you can get them right off of the stage. They're a little punchy, they're a little bit loopy, but you're going to be able to focus on them individually, where usually they're like lumped into, I don't know if you want to call them trust clusters of interviews.
Yes.
And it's a little hard to break those down. So I feel like the quality of the interview is better if you go to the
show. It was very good. Everything was worked out. It's a rough day today.
This is like a very high class complaint to be complaining about how tired and exhausted you are after going to the Survivor finale.
Let's
rein it back in. Come off of your tower, Rob.
I guess when you put it that way. Yes. Yeah, Josh Wiggler is such a saint that he's been listening to me just rant about different things this afternoon.
Rob has been having a tough day.
As I read negative emails and look at my comments on different social media profiles
today. How dare you spoil the outcome of Survivor Millennials versus Gen X on Instagram, Rob?
Look.
You're a monster is what you are.
It was a moment of weakness. And I'm not always thinking. Yes. Sometimes I'm just like again. I was just really exhausted. I wasn't thinking, taking some heat today.
Taking a little bit of heat. Well, how about some
across all platforms?
Well, we shall. If you are taking heat, then I believe it is only fair that we give out heated takes. We will have some heated takes today.
All right. So we're gonna go through everything. We're gonna take some of your voicemails, sort of like put a bow on this season. Maybe even look ahead to season 34.
Yeah.
I'm actually surprised that the audience has been particularly particularly restrained in, I thought today we were going to come on and all the feedback questions were going to be about season 34.
Oh, you really thought that this would just be, you know, everyone is psyched to see Sandra. You don't get my crown just cause. Like, you thought that's what it was all going to be about. I think this finale was so exciting that
the audience did a good job of okay, let me talk about that now. Like, new shiny thing.
Right.
Let me talk about that. No, that most of the questions are about season 33 stuff. But we could take a minute or two at the
We should.
And sort of look ahead to what's coming this spring to CBS. But Josh, how was your night at the finale?
It was great. It was fun. I was very sad to be so far away from you, Rob.
Yes. I thought that they were going to seat us near each other. No. I don't know how that works.
They broke up our friendship. I don't know why they chose to split us apart so far, but we were across the room from each other. I would occasionally wistfully look up and to the back right of the auditorium where you would be sitting next to the Khaleesi herself, Kim Spradlin,
yes,
who was your mystery co-host, who I was very nervous to spend quality time with at the finale, that I didn't have to be nervous about at all because I was completely removed from the situation. That actually was okay.
Yeah, so I had a very fun time at the finale with Kim Spradlin, who was with me to do the interviews on the red carpet. And
what
she
kind
did
of like
a,
hot takes was she whispering in your ear as the episode was unfolding? Like, was she saying like what Adam's animal face was, anything like that?
I don't know if she had hot takes during the episode, but it was just like we were just talking about different things. It was very, not as fun as when I sat next to you.
Oh, you're just saying that.
But it was definitely, I don't think we were spotted at all. Nobody said during the reunion, hey, I saw you and Kim Spradlin. I don't think did anybody spot you in the finale?
No, not really. I was sitting there with the tabulator. Kurt Clark was my guest, was my plus one for the finale. His first time going to a finale. That was very fun. Some great RHAP fans and friends of the podcast, Nate Tippy and Eric Lavallee. They were there as well. So we had a great little quartet, recruited them to my cause. You know my MO, Rob. I like to stand up and pump those fists up into the air as often as I can. I don't know. I haven't gone back to see the episode yet.
I don't think you were in a good spot to be on camera either.
I don't think so either. I don't think it was great. So I'm disappointed about that, but what are you going to do?
What are you going to do? But I was not only sitting with Kim during the finale, that I was also greeted like, you know, a couple minutes into the show, that also a great friend of the podcast, Shireen was at the finale.
Oh,
and she was like in disguise, and she's like, "I don't want anybody to know that I'm here."
Oh my god! Well, are you blowing up her secret now?
I think it's okay now. Okay. I think she didn't want people to know while she was there.
Okay,
no, it was very fun. As I had Shireen, who actually didn't even have a like.
What was her disguise? Did she have like the glasses?
She had
and mustache.
Like,
and
she had like straight hair.
Uh-huh.
And you didn't. I was like, oh, you didn't even recognize her. And so,
she wasn't like dressed up like Sia.
No, she wasn't. She didn't have like a Sia mask.
Great. That'd be a great Halloween costume.
Yes. And so, you know, I had Shireen on my left and Kim on my right. And it was a very fun way to
squad.
Watch. Yeah, it was a really, fun group to be watching the finale with.
But was it really embarrassing when you cried hysterically in front of Kim and Shireen because this finale got so emotional?
You know what? I said during the exit interviews, which, you know, those red carpet interviews are up. You could see the video as well. All on the website. And of course, great job by Steven and Sophie on the know-it-alls. And I really do appreciate Sophie stepping in for me on the know-it-all so that I could go to the finale. But boy, I did not expect to get it. I mean, I wasn't like hysterical, but because, you know, I didn't know the story.
Yeah. You're also not a very hysterical person.
Right. But I really, you know, even just like like talking about it with Nicole this morning, I could not get through talking about it without like getting like welling up a little bit. It's like it really is such a touching story.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, it had already been kind of framed by Adam as, you know, this was his greatest dream occurring simultaneously with his greatest nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
The experience of Survivor, of being out there, of being a super duper fan who has, you know, that goofy Instagram photo of him just as a little boy shrouded in buffs, like that guy going on to play Survivor, win or lose, like that was a dream come true while his mom is back home sick. And for this story to have sort of like the maximum impact ending on both ends of the extremes of not only does Adam get to go out there and play, he wins. He wins in a shutout, 10-0-0, and then comes home and his mother passes away an hour later.
And I didn't know that part of the story.
It's crazy.
I had thought that, you know, I had read different places that that he didn't. I don't know why that was reported, that was out there.
Yeah.
That he didn't make it back in time.
Yeah.
And she had passed away, you know, right after the game ended. And I was under the impression that he didn't make it back. And then just the fact that he made it back and talked to her for an hour.
Yeah.
I mean, it's such a crazy story.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so nuts.
No, I mean, and like, I can only imagine that, like, going through the experience of Survivor and leaving and returning to civilization and having to reintegrate, you can speak to this better than I can, must be a thing. Like, I remember talking to you about it during Evolution of Strategy, mm-hmm. In the Amazon chapter. Like, you went back to your job a day later, you know,
like it was like the weekend,
you know,
after.
But it was very quickly, and so like you really kind of have to hop back into it. Now imagine hopping back into it as the winner of your season, you know, feeling pretty good about that, and then also this just incredible trauma is horrible. And the way Adam, I thought, you know obviously it was so emotional, and he was, you know, crying, and it was very hard for him to get through. And I thought that he said something really poignant that really sat with me, where he talked about how, you know, it is this powerful story. It is this, you know, amazing story, but this is my life. And like, he's a fan of the show. You know, he listens to podcasts. He reads the commentary. He's on Reddit and all of that. So of course he is aware of how people have been saying, like, what a story. This is, you know, kind of, you know, heartwarming, you know, also, you know, deeply, you know, upsetting, heartbreaking. All it runs such a range of emotions. And really, I mean, we talk about a show, and we talk about contestants as characters on a show, and that's the thing that we're viewing. But it does, you know, maybe sometimes it takes a moment like this to realize just how real this reality show can be. So I thought that was a really, you know, interesting way of framing that. Like, this is not just a story for me. This is what I'm living through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he mentioned it during the finale.
Exactly.
Like, I know what this sounds like, but like, this actually is my life.
Yeah,
this
exactly.
is happening to me. And, you know, it's just like, you know, it just is. I don't know, you know, what could be sort of like a more powerful thing to be being talked about on this, you know, crazy game show that you and I have studied for all of these years.
Yeah.
To have a thing like this happen, you know, I just feel like that there's just so much about, like, life that we don't even, like, aren't even scratching the surface of beginning to understand.
Yeah. But, I mean, it was a really... It was a very moving ending to what had been a season of swift moves, big moves, fast moves. Mm-hmm. And it ended up being a very, very emotional ending. And there's something cathartic about being there. Not a dry eye in the house. Very, very, you know, everyone was really captivated by it, I think. And everyone at home, hopefully most people who have feelings and souls. I know that there are some who do not. And that is, I was going to say okay, but it's not really that okay.
Okay.
But yeah, no, and I'm very happy for Adam. You know, good for him. Super duper fan winning the game the way that he won the game. That's great.
Yeah. I mean, such a sweet guy.
He's a really nice kid.
I mean, that it's just like that he works in a homeless shelter. I mean, he seems just like the nicest person to win the game. Obviously, somebody not afraid to make moves in the game that didn't inhibit him.
And so blunt. Like, I'm still trying to wrap my head around this. Like, this is one of, like, the takeaways of the Adam win to me that I haven't fully processed yet. I've only watched the finale the one time. I would have loved to have gone back and watched it before we hopped on the podcast here. Just not possible. But the way that Adam, like, talked to people, it was just so straightforward about, David, I have to vote you off. Like, I can't have you here. You may as well vote me out tonight.
If I don't, you'll win.
You'll win.
You'll take the money.
But,
and I don't want you
and
to.
And I don't want that.
But, I want to win.
And even going all the way back to, like, Taylor, I screwed you. I ruined your game. I totally betrayed you, Taylor. And we were joking and laughing and making fun of him about that. And it wasn't exactly a flattering look.
Mm-hmm.
But in retrospect, that bluntness served him quite well. A blunt instrument in Adam Klein's toolbox.
Yeah. I mean, that he just is going to, you know, give it to you straight. It's not from a place of malice.
Right.
It's not from a, like, that he, because he doesn't like you. It, like, he's just, but he's not going to pull punches on these things. And
yeah.
I do think that for a jury, that is the kind of thing that when we go back to like talking about like the Todd Herzog playbook of the final tribal council, I mean, that's kind of what that is of, you know, John Robert. Yeah, I got you out because you were the biggest threat in the game. And, right. and I think that for like Adam, you know, he's sort of adding that to not just at the, in the jury,
right.
but over the course of, you know, his like the 39 days, not sort of like pulling, you know, a facade off.
A facade.
Yeah. Yeah. Sort of like the antithesis of what Jay was supposed to do during the challenge with his locker combination.
Right, yeah. Pull the right. covers up.
He didn't, he's not unmasking himself, you know, like we've seen also, you know, a Cochran also like Malcolm, like, yeah, you were going to beat me if I didn't get rid of you.
Yeah.
You know, I think he was sort of like, you know, approach the game, like, especially from like the post merge.
I think that that's such an interesting point that he's just like final tribal Todd it all over the season. Like, mm-hmm. you know, like that, just like blunt talk like that. But like, you just, I don't know, like every Survivor season that you and I have talked about, like, I feel like we always are talking about like the restriction of that kind of information and the key, like the art of the blind side and really wanting to, you know, conceal your cards in such a way that I feel like the openness of Adam's game is something that I'm still reconciling. And that's cool. All these seasons into this thing, it's, I feel like it was a different play style than we've seen before.
And I wonder if it's that type of attitude which contributes to the fact that, you know, it's been commented, you know, ad nauseum of what a great cast this is.
Yeah.
How this is not a bitter cast, that they all sort of like have like moved on from the game. Hey, that was your move. You got me. And moving on from there. I wonder if that has sort of like, you know, filter down to the other players in the season where sort of just like being, if I'm telling you, hey, I'm coming for you, Josh, I'm coming for you.
Right.
And then eventually I get you or you get me because I said I was coming for you. I feel like that kind of thing you're able to get over as opposed to you're my best friend. You're my best friend. You're my best friend.
Thank you.
I appreciate that. And then ultimately you don't see the blindside coming.
Right.
That's the thing that takes a long time to get over. And you know, maybe with David and Ken, and David really did not seem to have any animosity towards Ken for him flipping on him at the final four.
I think that I'm really excited. Look, I'm excited for season 34, of course, but I'm really excited for seasons 35 and beyond. And why I'm excited about that is because I think that, you know, the way that the game was played this season was not even just from Adam, but from a lot of these people. And certainly in, like, you know, talking to them in exit interviews and the way that they described the situation out there. And it was very apparent on the show, too, is just the open dialogue of strategy that is happening on Survivor right now. And I can't wait to see how that advances. You know, the next crop of, you know, new people to play this game are going to be looking at this past season.
Yeah, it's
as that
interesting
model.
The production schedule, which we don't talk about a ton,
sure.
but they, you know, they film one season that's like in the like March, April ish, and one season that'll be after 34 airs. So that season 35 will be sort of probably more reflective of the gameplay of season 33 and season 36, which will be filmed presumably right after season 34 ends, will probably be much more affected by what happens in season 34.
Yeah, so it's interesting. So I'm excited to see what the impact of this season is on the future.
And it'd be weird if like the odd numbered seasons have a different tone to them
yeah.
than the even numbered seasons like moving forward
yeah.
because that keeps getting reflected in, you know, it'll be a while before the stuff from season 33 gets into an even numbered season.
Yeah. Did you like the super duper fan who was in the audience of the Survivor finale who could name every single Survivor winner in order?
Yeah, they do. There's a great warm up guy who comes on during the breaks and talks to people, and he was giving out buffs, and there was a kid who could name every single Survivor winner, but it was odd because it was seemed like the kid was almost like he memorized like a list from like Wikipedia.
Because the pronunciation was off? Is
yes,
that why?
Yes.
It was going so well. It's like Richard Hatch, Tina, Ethan, Vasipa.
Yeah, Vasipa.
We got to Vasipa. I think it was like
Eris.
Eris. Parpotty. Yeah. I'd read something.
Yeah.
That was a great moment. That's a future Adam Klein that we were witnessing the birth of.
Yes. And then the warm-up guy was like, wow, that's amazing. Can anybody do it faster? And I was like, ah. And, you know, I don't want to show off. I don't know, like, nothing more pathetic than the former contestant who's in the audience.
What a know-it-all you
yeah,
are.
Well, I actually could do it faster. I don't know why I'm being Ken.
Yeah, apparently.
Yeah, apparently, there's someone here who could do it a little bit faster.
Yeah. No,
like, whatever happened to just, like, rattling them off the top of your head? Okay.
So, I really liked Ken asking you to do your Ken impersonation.
Yeah, I have a question. I have a question about that, about how awkward that was during the exit interviews. Let me play that question for you. Let's break the seal on the voicemails. Here is Aaron.
Hello. I just finished listening to your exit interviews, and my question is, how awkward was it doing your Ken impression in front of Ken on a scale of 1 to 10? And also, how do you think that impression compares to the one that Brett did of you? Thanks so much. Bye.
Yeah, underreported story. Brett LaBelle apparently does a mean Rob Cesternino. He was so
like,
proud of it that he came
up. Like an angry me?
Yeah, he came up to me during our, he was very excited to talk to the host of the Wiggle Room. We had a great time, and he led off with his Rob Cesternino, which was really just, yeah. Which honestly is, you know, you do that.
Yes. And okay. All right.
That's good.
All right. So here is a clip of me with the aforementioned Ken from the red carpet from last night.
All right, everybody. I'm very excited to be back here with one of tonight's runners up. Please welcome Ken. Ken, how you doing?
I'm doing all right, brother. Been better, been worse.
Yeah. Hanging in there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Could you do me a favor real quick?
Yes.
Just before we get rolling.
Yes.
Would you do my voice for me?
Always good.
Just for a minute. I really wanted to hear it.
Apparently, this is a very embarrassing moment for me to be.
It's not bad. Not bad. Yeah.
It's easier. It's easier not when bad, you're not bad. Here. Ken.
I understand. I get that. That's why I wanted to put it on
he
you.
He pictured yes. you being shorter.
Now,
Yes. Now, also, what if that was recorded on vinyl? Would it have sounded better?
A lot smoother. Always.
More
smoother.
Texture.
You know that.
Yes.
All right.
So smooth. Is Kim saying that you thought Ken would be smaller or that Ken thought you would be smaller?
I don't think that Ken probably gave my height any thought prior
to
this.
He probably figured he could take you either way.
Yeah. I mean, who wouldn't figure that? I mean, I think that probably David could take me in a fight.
Ken also said, been better, been worse.
Been better, been worse.
But I don't know, man. Like, he seemed pretty bummed, that guy.
Yeah.
It definitely felt like a little Eeyore-ish to me.
A little bit. Also, that Dalton Ross had tweeted earlier today that Ken missed the exit interviews on the phone, or at least with Dalton Ross. But that could just be, you know, hard partying.
Well, I think that he maybe is not a fan of Dalton Ross's Ken impression.
Oh, does he do one?
I don't know if he does one.
So that people had said that I really choked when Ken gave me the opportunity. One of the things I had been reading today, that I had really choked.
Stop reading your own press here, Rob. It's not good.
The thing was, all during the show, Kim, because I was, you know, I'll do, like, if you watch Survivor with me, I'll do, like, running commentary. And then Shireen was also, like, apparently.
Yeah.
And so as the show was going on, Kim was just like, I'm going to make you do it in front of him.
Oh,
I'm going to make you do it. I'm like, Kim, don't embarrass me.
Yeah, but you
Kim.
Knew you were going to have to anyway.
She's like, oh, I'm going to make you do it. I'm going to bring it up.
And then she was very embarrassed by it.
She talks a big game.
Yeah, secondhand embarrassment for Kim Spradlin. Didn't know that was the thing for Kim.
Yes.
But yeah, I felt like, you know, not to knock on Ken. Like, I understand Ken being really bummed, but do you agree with this? Like, he came off to me as somebody who was really not thrilled with how that all played out.
Yeah, I totally do see that. I was surprised Sophie said on the know-it-alls that she thought Ken was going to win the season.
Yeah, I guess it's Sophie and Colin Stone.
In the final three, Sophie thought that he was going to win.
Yeah, and again, Sophie and Colin Stone. I don't know how you get that read on that final tribal council that Ken is going to be able to win. I mean, I do appreciate what I think Sophie tweeted this out. I haven't had a chance to listen to know-it-alls yet, but I did see that she had tweeted something to the effect of, like, that's a great move. You cut your closest ally right before you get there. It's not super flashy. It's not big move all season long, but it's a critical move and it's a key move, and that's worth giving some merit to. And I mean, like, that's like the Earl Cole game, you know, like,
right?
That's the kind of thing where, like, that's a very valid way to win Survivor. So, like, total credit to Ken for making that move. But was it his move, Rob, or was it Adam's move?
Well, can I just talk about Ken's move a little bit here?
Yes.
Because I felt like that it was a move that was not consistent with Ken's brand,
yeah,
which all season long was, you know, it's hard for this to not just be a Dave Johnson impression, but
sure,
like, you know, honor, loyalty, integrity.
Right.
And that's what he preached all season. And then when it came down to it, like, here's David talking about, like, I know Ken is not going to screw me over.
Right.
Ken has been my best friend in this game. I know that he's not going to screw me over.
Well, apparently.
Apparently, yeah. You're wrong.
Yeah. But I felt like that Ken could have sat there in the final three. Like, I feel like it's the right move on paper for Ken to make, but how is it the right? I don't want to be all Eliza results oriented, but is that the right move when he then sits in the final three and doesn't get one vote? I mean, I feel like for Ken that I feel like that he is able to at least make the comparison to say, like, okay, Adam played the game one way. Hannah played the game one way. I played the game my way. I never gave into the temptation of, I always put my friends first.
But you're saying his way has like a bullet in it by the end.
Right,
yeah.
Right. He was the person that he sort of allowed him, and I'm sure there's a great movie, it's Harvey Dent, but he basically allowed...
He lived long enough to become the villain.
Right,
right,
right. He actually was able to give in, that he had all these morals and this integrity.
He'd be a great Two-Face. Oh my God, I'm just like visualizing it right now for our Survivor Batman that we'll never do.
Shave one half
of
his face.
Yeah, that'd be good.
But I felt like that for him, for that particular player, I felt like that it was just... not consistent with what he had been preaching all season long. And I thought it made him seem hypocritical, even though from a gameplay point of view, it was the right move, but it was that he had nothing left to sell at the end. And I feel like in a lot of ways that I thought the relationship at the end of the game between David and Ken, it was in some ways similar to my relationship with Matthew in Amazon. That I felt like...
That's interesting.
And I felt like that in the end, that I felt like, you know what, Matthew is the only friend that I have left in this game.
Yeah.
And I want to go to the end with Matthew, and I want to sit next to Matthew at the end of the game. And obviously David wants to sit next to Ken at the end of the game.
But these guys wake up
and they think like, oh,
in the end,
wait, you know what? I want to be
the mastermind.
What I need to do is get rid of this person because I'm going to lose to them. But then Matthew, I felt like that he would, I mean, against Jenna, he gets one vote. He only gets Butch's vote. And he doesn't really have anything that he's able to sell to that jury to say that this is the kind of person I am versus who Jenna is. Whereas sitting next to me, I think he would have been able to have a case where, well, Rob was really the person who was trying to, you know, be the mastermind.
Yeah.
I think he gets more votes against me than he does ultimately against Jenna, that he has at least consistent messaging. But I felt like that it's a harder case for him to make once he gives into that temptation of being a person that's not who he was for the first 38 days of the game.
I think that's a really great point. Not the least of which is because you are probably equally terrified of the notion of Matt and Ken wielding a machete, given apparently all the impressions. But I actually think that's interesting because he gets no votes going up against Adam and Hannah. But if it's Hannah and David and Ken, I feel like he's getting Jess's vote.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like, something that's come out in the exit press is Adam and Jess apparently were very, very close, closer than we got to see. So I think a few people were baffled that Jess did not vote for Ken. Clearly, from, you know, exit press is not canon, whatever. At least in their version of events, Adam and Jess were close. I feel like Jess is voting for Ken over David. So in that scenario, if he does hold true, he's not going to win, but he'll be the definitive second place finisher.
And I asked Ken about that. Boy, Jess seemed like really, you know, angry with you in the fact he said, no, she was testing me. That's what it said.
Yeah, and then you go another test.
More testing.
Yeah, really pushing your luck there by bringing up the testing.
I always do.
I know you do.
I always do, Josh.
Ask
my wife.
Oh,
ask my
I'm
wife.
Not going to. I don't need to.
Yes.
I don't need to.
Yes.
I think, you know, he's kind of damned if he does, damned if he doesn't. He's not winning the game at that point anyway in the final four.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing he can do anymore. But I think that you are looking at, like, Can he stay true to what that reputation was of the honor, loyal, integrity, you know, the coach rules according to Russell, or does he make this move to go there to the end fighting for his daughter? And I think that, you know, he tried to frame it that way, that that was his ultimate loyalty. But I don't think that anyone was really going to buy that argument no matter what. The only thing that I can see if he brings David there to the end instead of Adam, and that's all assuming that David is going to win the fire challenge because that's the only way it's going to go, is that I think that he would get Jess's vote and he would be the second place finisher. Instead, he is co-runners-up with Hannah Shapiro. And once again, we do not have a clear runner-up. But in my heart, Rob, I'm going to say that Hannah will be the one that I view as the second place finisher this season.
Interesting in terms of Hannah versus Ken. I know that we face this in terms of how do I order the exit interviews?
Yeah.
In terms of I put Hannah second.
I put Hannah second as well. I actually, perhaps this is a heated take, Rob. I thought that Hannah had the best final tribal council of the three of them by a lot. Not, you know, Adam's, you know, emotional telling of his story notwithstanding. I think that Hannah came in here owning the moves that she made, articulating her points very well. I think that this was a jury that was decided. I think that this was a jury that appreciated Adam's game more. I think that there were flaws in all of their games, honestly. But I think that there were certainly flaws in Adam's games, but, you know, fairly big flaws in Hannah's, that she talks about how she did not really understand the perception of her game. That's really key. That's critical. That's huge. You do have to get that. But in terms of what her perception of her game was, I think that the road that she had walked, the way that she had seen it, I think that she laid out the case for what she had done in her version of events, what her narrative was, really, really cleanly. I was really impressed with that. I just don't think that there was any way that she was going to be able to sell this jury.
Yeah. Sophie had some interesting thoughts on that, too, as well, during the know-it-alls and talking about that, how Hannah was sort of like selling a story that was not consistent with what the people on the jury witnessed.
Right.
So she was talking about things that really were not, you know, as the people who were about to vote, you know, understood them. And I think it was a lot to take in. I thought that she was really fantastic in the interview that we did with her. But I wasn't watching the Final Tribal Council feeling like, oh my God, she's killing it. I'd like to go back and watch it again and sort of see if I can sort of parse, you know, points for, you know, so maybe sort of like a little bit more like we do on the Evolution of Strategy.
Right.
Like, although this was actually a good answer. This is what they wanted to hear.
Oh, I'm looking forward to getting to the Final Tribal portion of TO's Chapter 33. It'll be a really good discussion. But I think that, I didn't ever have the sense that Hannah was going to win. I thought it was a very clear Adam victory. You know, it was really just the question of who gets to Final Tribal Council, David or Adam, and that person wins. So I never thought that there was anything that Hannah was going to be able to do here in this Tribal Council that would turn, you know, would convert a victory from these people. But I thought that in terms of how she saw how she played the game, I think that she articulated that very well. I think just ultimately, like, how she viewed her game was never going to be how everybody else viewed it. But I don't know how she could have tailored it in such a way.
Or figged it
in such a way that it was going to be receptive to those people. You know, because she just doesn't have that, you know, she doesn't have that knowledge of what everyone else is thinking. You just don't know.
All right. I want to talk about something important in terms of Adam and his win. And we got a lot of feedback about this, but let me just play one of the calls about this. And this is from Leslie in Austin.
Hi, Rob. This is Leslie in Austin. I'm so happy for Adam's win last night, but I have to admit I was a little disappointed that he played the mom card at Final Tribal Council. I think he would have won without it, and now I worry that all the casuals are saying he only won because of the sympathy vote. What do you guys think? Thanks.
This is a very interesting question. I know that we got lots of different versions of this in terms of, boy, do you think that now is the evolution of the game going to be everybody is going to just come into the finale and reveal what their secret story is, mm-hmm. whether it's, hey, my wife is having a baby, my mom is sick, this is happening to me. People were talking to me last night about, would you think we will get some sort of like Johnny Fairplay type mm-hmm. move in the Final Tribal Council? Somebody's going to come in. And I think it's important to talk about whether or not that the game was decided by Adam revealing his secret to the jury.
I think absolutely it was not.
Yeah.
I think it's not to just like, you know, paint it with a broad brush. I think it's kind of ridiculous to think that that's the case, that that story on its own was enough to convince that entire jury to vote for him. I don't think that there's any chance that that's the case. I think that this jury came into this tribal council ready and committed to voting for Adam. I think that, you know, the story certainly helps contextualize a lot about Adam and the way that he played and the hyper focus. It certainly doesn't hurt to have that extraordinary moment of vulnerability and revelation in front of these people that you have fought against and fought with beside for all of these, you know, for the past 39 days. I think that that can only help. But to say that this is, you know, the reason he won, it's kind of ridiculous to me.
You and I sat here a year ago and had the same exact conversation about, do you think that Jeremy won because he told everybody that Val was pregnant? And we said the same thing, like, no, that's not why he won.
Cherry on top. That's, you know, it's like,
and I feel like people forgot that they thought that, like, because nobody feels like, oh, Jeremy only won because his wife was having a baby.
Right.
Like, I don't think that people think that now, but that week that we were talking about it, that's certainly the case. And I do think that as we get further away from the moment of the finale, I think that we'll start to sort of crystallize. I'd love to have Adam come through here and, you know, talk about his game, talk about the decisions that were made along the way.
Right.
And I think that we'll be able to, you know, pull things into a, you know, a bigger focus. But who is the person that was voting for someone else that ultimately switched their votes around?
Nobody. I really don't think so.
The only people I could possibly say, maybe somebody like a Taylor or a Michelle, somebody like that, if Taylor was still a little sore about the figgy thing, and then maybe saw Adam in a different light, but like in this like ultimate like fan fiction scenario,
call it two votes.
Yeah,
you know, call it two votes. He still has eight votes. You know, he's still winning this thing. I think that Adam was winning this thing every day of the week against these two people that he was up against. That being said, I mean, in the long view of Adam Klein as a winner, how am I going to remember him? Am I going to remember him first and foremost as this guy who played this really, really great game? Or am I going to remember Adam as somebody who had this remarkable story that I have not seen on Survivor before? I mean, we had already talked about that before. The truth is, I probably will think story first with Adam Klein. I've no idea what it's going to look like 2 years from now. Like, if everybody now is just like completely open and transparent with Survivor strategy moving forward, then props are probably going to be going Adam Klein's way in the future. I don't think that, and I don't think that Adam would necessarily disagree with this. I don't think that Adam was the best player this season. You know, I think that he was the best player in that tribal council for sure, in that final tribal. I don't think that he was the best player of the entire season, but I do think that he went in there with a really good case for, you know, the moves that he had made. They were all in public, the way that he had talked to people, everything like that. I think that this jury was really Adam inclined, to reward this guy. I think, regardless of story, in terms of like my memory of Adam moving forward, I'm going to remember how that boy made me cry a lot. You know, that's going to be something that's going to be very much on my mind, but I will never for a second think that that's why he won Survivor.
But I think that probably the audience and I think we're probably sleeping on his game to a degree. I really think we are.
I think it's going to be a fun game to unpack. I think it's going to be a really fun game to unpack. And maybe he is the best player. I don't know. I don't want to, you know, he certainly won the season. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I would backpedal on that just a little bit. But I would say that he was clearly, you know, he was the guy that was going to that final tribal council, getting all of those votes completely independent of everything that was going on back home in the story that he told.
So in terms of Adam and his gameplay and, you know, looking at his game versus games that have come before, there was a very interesting moment that we got a lot of comments about on Twitter during the episode, Josh, last night. I want to play a bit for you from Zeke's question at the final tribal council, which started with,
heartiest congratulations, gang.
Yes, heartiest congratulations, gang. Another great season of Survivor in the books.
Yes, heartiest congratulations, gang.
Oh my God, every jury question should start with that move.
Heartiest congratulations, gang.
Gang. Yeah, it's great.
Yes.
It's really good. Already off to a great start. Now let's get to the perfect part.
All right.
It's a very exciting time because we're in the midst of the evolution of Survivor strategy.
Yes.
And I think tonight's winner should represent that evolution.
Yes.
Ken, you played a loyal game, you were a provider, but you did nothing to evolve the game.
Apparently.
So here's how I see it. Adam, Hannah, both of you, how did you contribute to the strategic evolution of the world's greatest game? Adam, one of the things that I think has happened...
Well, I want to play you Adam's answer also, and then I want to comment on that as
okay,
well.
Okay, cool. What's it?
In recent seasons, and that we saw a lot this season, is that people, once they take control, think that they have to continue to stay in control throughout the rest of the season. And people saw that you were in control. They saw that Chris was in control. So I made sure that at the final six, there were three people in front of me that were bigger threats than I was. And one of my best allies was a challenged beast who could beat them and we could take them out.
Great. Thanks. Hannah, same question.
The idea of building an actual relationship with someone and working with someone, you and I worked together as a partnership with trust until we went against each other, is what the idea of a trust cluster is. And I think that is an evolution of the game.
Hey, get out of here, trust cluster. Come on.
Must.
All right. So this is fantastic, Josh. This is amazing.
Boosting the sales. Thank you, Zeke. Much appreciate.
Yeah, almost. Certainly. I mean, selfishly, yes.
I thought that's all we were going to be talking about. It's just the evolution of Survivor strategy. And I mean, it's not exactly the title.
Off-season, best time. I mean, long time until you get to the next Survivor season. No better time to catch up on the evolution of strategy.
Yeah, if you haven't dipped your toe into that pond yet, now would be the time.
At evolutionstrategy.com. Yeah. Certainly. Yeah. Okay.
First chapter for free. And the first chapters of Volume 2 and Volume 3 are also secretly for free. Hit me up for the code.
Okay. But in terms of Adam's game, do you look at it as an evolution where Adam was able to point out people made big moves and then he was able to sort of in whether you want to call it a meat shield?
I do want to call it a meat shield.
Yes.
I mean, I think that's what it is. I mean, you know, is this traditional meat? Maybe not. Like you're usually thinking of the meat shield strategy as sort of like the big bulky alpha types. And that is not exactly how I would certainly not how I would think of David Wright. Probably not even how I would think of Jay because he is a shorter dude. But you know, I think that it's the same principle, right? Like it's keeping threats alive that will, you know, be in the game that will shield you because no one will realize that you are the threat behind those people. It's not unsimilar to Tony's game though. You know, like that's really kind of what Tony did, like keeping the young lad around as long as he had, you know, like things like that. Like I feel like we've seen this type of strategy implemented before. Maybe not pushed to the limit quite the way that we saw it this season.
I would love to talk to Adam and really do a deep dive and just talk about like how much, because, you know, when we do the evolution strategy and we talk about like, you know, the winner rankings and stuff like that, like how much was this by design? Like at what point in the game did this become Adam's plan? I mean, was it sort of thought out from the point where where he's voting with Zeke to go after Chris at
right.
that point? Could he start to see what it was going to look like? I mean, how many times did it change along the way? When did he decide this was what he wanted to do? But I think it's certainly interesting. I didn't think of it from a Tony perspective. I looked at it more as like a reaction to Tony. I thought of this as sort of like in sort of like the post-Tony era Survivor Hall of Famer, Tony Vlachos.
Indeed. Very happy about that. Even though I didn't vote for him, I'm thrilled to see him make it.
Yes. Very excited.
I had an old school ballot, but if anyone is going to be of the new schools that made it in, I was very thrilled to see Tony.
We both had two out of three people nominated make it to the Hall of Fame on our ballot.
We should feel pretty good about
this.
Yes.
Yes. But in terms of like a post-Tony reaction, I did think that this was sort of interesting to be able to point out people, okay, he's a threat. He's going to win the game. He's a threat. She's a threat. She's a threat. They're going to win the game. They're going to win the game. Get them voted out in terms of like as a reaction to making a big move, where I think Adam is sort of like saying, hey, maybe make a move and then step back, let other people sort of take the spotlight, as opposed to, okay, where we saw Zeke saying, okay, I made this move. Now what's my next move? Now I got to take this person out. So I think that is an interesting way to sort of look at things and look at the landscape.
Yeah. But you know, it's really, I mean, it's very cool that that's how it shook out. And I'm sure that there is a lot of intentionality behind it. But man, is it risky, right? Like, you know, things had to break a really specific way in this finale for Adam to be able to get there. David had proven that he can win some challenges here.
I mean, he an immunity idol at Final Five really was pretty crucial. He's going out of the game at that point if he doesn't find an idol.
You know who David is?
No, Adam is.
Point, right? Well, I mean, like, there's a whole, I mean, that's a whole muster cluster of its own.
But they decide that let's put the votes on Adam, and he happens to go out and find the idol, and then he tells Hannah, and they change the,
It's a tightrope. It's a tightrope. And that's, you know, the way that we traditionally think of, like, the Tony style of play was, like, you know, running at 100 miles an hour on a tightrope. And I think to have, to risk that so close to the end, like, it really is an all or nothing approach. It's like you've just, it's like playing a game of hearts and you've decided that you're going to go and try and shoot the moon. But you don't necessarily have the hand that makes that a slam dunk guarantee that you can do that. You can feel pretty good that you've got a decent enough hand that's going to make that work, but you don't know if there's another diamond in the mix and if your eight of diamonds is going to be enough to get that final hand.
Right.
So it's really pushing it right up to the edge. So it was really cool to see that it paid off. I don't know that it's an evolution of the game in terms of, I think that the meat shield strategy is certainly something we've talked about a lot, and I really do think that it's pretty similar. But it was pushed to an extreme, the likes of which I can't readily think of a really good counter, counterpart to it.
Certainly, in terms of talking about Big Brother, it's something that we talk about a lot. The idea of, hey, why don't we target the floaters, target the pawns, mm-hmm. get them out of the game, and sort of, as long as there are other big threats in the game, I have a better chance of moving forward because I know myself that I am a threat in the game. I've thought about this a lot in terms of if I was to ever play again, I think I would probably be more likely to say, let's keep some of these threatening people around,
right?
Because it would be less attention on me. The question is then, how do you disarm that bomb?
No.
How do you then, at the end of the game, when it's like you and five other great players at the end of the game, and it was a very strong end game. We talked about this final six of, wow, this is an incredible final six that we have. Then any one of them could have ultimately, you have a much lesser degree of control over how that end game is going to shake out than playing the game away, like, you know, as I sat with Kim last night, where, you know, she's controlling everything that happens there down the stretch of those last couple of votes. Like, she's deciding, who do I want to sit next to me in this final three, as opposed to who are the big targets that I still have to pick off down the stretch.
Was Kim having any flashbacks during that final immunity challenge? That's the same one that she won in One World.
Well, I had said to her, I pointed it out. I was like, Kim, this is your challenge. She's like, oh, yeah, it is.
So casual. Yeah. Oh, my God.
Yes.
How was Kim? She was just great.
Yeah, Kim was really so much fun. Okay. I mean, she's really like the easiest person to talk to, and she was just really excited.
Very intimidating, I find. Oh my gosh,
you find Kim intimidating?
Yeah, she's just too
intimidating.
Too incredible. Too incredible.
Yeah, no, she was just, I think, also very happy to have a mom's night out. Also,
yeah.
I mean, she says in the exit interviews, "I peed alone today." I was just very happy about that.
Yeah, good for her.
So she was very good, and a lot of credit to Kim's husband Brian, husband of the year, allowed Kim to take a night out to go to a Survivor finale, and he stayed home with the kids so she could do that. So that's really fantastic.
I'm really looking forward to hearing you talk to Adam about this exact topic, though.
Kim's kids?
Not what about Kim's
who
kids.
Cares with that, Josh?
Kim's kids.
Oh.
About how Adam, everything about his endgame, I really do look forward to getting. I mean, because we got to talk
and
to
he
him.
He had answers for everything last night in terms of,
he's thought this through.
He told us last night, he's like, that's why you and Steven were wrong. You had it wrong about it.
Yeah. Well, he's been paying attention.
Yeah.
He's been paying attention. He's been listening. He's been watching. He's been reading. He's a super duper fan, and he just so happened to win. So that must have been an experience. So looking forward to hearing about all of that.
Very cool. All right. Let's talk about some other things from last night. Let's do a question, Josh, from Matt Eichel.
Hey, Josh and Rob. This is Matt Eichel from New York City. I was wondering if you guys caught the Drogon appearance during the finale reunion show last night, perched on Michelle's shoulder. It's funny, we had that secret scene a few weeks ago with Michelle talking about dragons and Marco Polo, and now the week that Marco Polo, the TV show, gets canceled, we now have the Mother of Dragons herself making an appearance during the reunion shows. Get your thoughts on that. Thanks. Bye.
All right, so our thoughts on the tragic cancellation of Marco Polo. Very, very upsetting news. It's rare that Netflix cancels their original series, and unfortunately Marco Polo was one of the very few instances of that.
Did you think of Michelle's dragon costume?
Again, I had a bad angle.
Bjork-like.
It was kind of Bjork-like. You have to tell me, because you were more central in the auditorium. I was in the far left, and she was kind of far left of the jury, so I couldn't really see.
Mm-hmm. Well, she apparently was wearing
when
something.
When are we going to lose that? Ever?
Never, no. Never.
Okay.
And she had like this thing that was like sort of like a, I don't know if it was like, if it was sort of like a shawl that was a dragon, or it was sort of like part of her costume or her outfit.
Yeah.
But did Jeff ask her about it at the end? I was already at the red carpet at the very end of the show, and I know she got a question.
No, I think that she was asked more about like the sportsmanship, if I'm remembering it correctly, of just like the attitude in the game. I don't think that he said anything about the dragon. I think the dragon just spoke for itself.
Yeah.
You know, it's just kind of there, and it's just like a good little inside gag for the people who saw that secret scene, people who read Michelle's bio, who read her pregame interviews and knew that she was a fan of dragons.
Mm-hmm.
So she's just letting her dragon freak flag fly.
Yes, okay.
I don't think we need to spend a lot of time in it. There's so much more that we got to talk about here from this finale.
Okay. Boy.
We haven't even talked about David Wright. I mean, entering this episode and even watching this episode, I was deeply convinced that this was David Wright's win.
Everybody was picking him to win.
Yeah. It's very upsetting to me that I've lost my fantasy league as a result of this.
Yes.
Happy for Adam, but it sucks for me. And the new guy in the league is the winner. It sucks. It's not good. But I felt like David's time was up going in to his final tribal council. Did you have any sense? Did you think that we were going to fire, or did you feel like that was going to be it for David?
I just thought that we were going to go to rocks. I thought that going to
rocks, you'd have to go to fire.
Going to fire.
Yeah, yeah.
I just meant that as a tie. But I thought that we were going to have a fire making challenge, because I felt like that was like the best of both worlds for Ken. I thought that was having him have his cake and also be able to eat it, have his squid and eating it,
yes,
too. Because he would have been able to say,
the only fair way to settle this is like in the olden times, right, to have a duel.
Yeah.
Whatever happened to settling things with a duel?
Whatever happened to duels?
Yes.
We fight for it?
Yeah.
I didn't think that it was going to happen. Or at the very least, I didn't think that David was going to pass through this tribal council once we got there. And the tell for me was we had not gotten anything really substantial in the episode up to this point from Adam about his family story.
Mm-hmm.
That really doesn't kick back in until, you know, toward the end of the episode. And it just did not feel like, for me, that Adam is going home without some sort of major acknowledgement of that first. So the fact that that was absent, that there wasn't like a major Adam confessional talking about why he's here, what the stakes are, what he's doing this for, going into that tribal council, I was automatically very nervous for David. So that was where I got to have like my shock a little bit earlier in the tribal council before him actually getting voted out. But even then, just watching him get voted out, it was sad. I was very sad to see that happen.
Yeah, but he took it so
well. Yeah.
And really was like, you know, but similar to Will, you know, it was just like, wow, I did this. And
similar to everybody. I mean, this is that's really been like the top to bottom. I mean, like Brett was kind of a
Michaela was a little annoyed.
Michaela was annoyed and Brett was annoyed. But otherwise, you know, hard to remember how anyone else felt earlier in the game. But from
Lucy had a very stern look.
Sure. From the merge onward, like it's been, you know,
yeah,
it's been very classy. But David, like you could tell, like that was like what he was going to say tomorrow, right? Like he was going to talk about this kind of thing tomorrow. And I think that he just didn't want to leave without having, you know, really kind of stepped out and said his piece.
Also, David makes the incredible fake idol. So
this was really, really fun. I totally spaced and didn't even ask him about it in the exit interview. I feel terrible about that now. But it was very fun to see, because going into the finale, not only rewatching the season ahead of time, but I also went back and I revisited my interviews with the final six from before they flew out to Fiji.
Mm-hmm.
And David Wright planted his flag, as Antonio Mazzara would like to say. David talked to me about how he wanted to create a fake idol and put it in like the rice, like put it in like the food supply. And he used the words like, let's see what kind of fish I could catch out of this. So this was on his mind from before the game.
It was on his bucket list. Hey, it's almost day 39.
It was on his bucket list. And he, you know, really geniusly, like he knows that Jay knows what the idol mechanisms are this season. You know, he knows that Jay has played an idol before. He knows, but from his own knowledge of having, you know, found two idols, how these things are hidden. And he just plays it beautifully. Like he just like Pied Piper'd Jay through the forest to the exact spot where this idol is. It's a beautiful looking thing. This is a great payoff too for something that Survivor has been wanting to do for the past couple of years, for the past couple of seasons. We've been hearing about this idea starting with Second Chance that idols look different from each other, that no one, you know, no two idols are going to look exactly the same. This to me, I mean, Jay, I think in his interview with you was like, yeah, I wasn't even thinking about that. Or maybe he said that with me, I think. But I think that idea of you now just believe that just about anything could be an idol, to see that played off like this, I think that's great. I'm really happy about that. I think that it was a really fun moment in an awesome way. If Jay's going to go, if my boy Jay has to leave this game, I think that was a really fun way for him to go, and he's a great sport about it.
Let's take a question, big picture, from Noah from Chicago.
Okay, Rob, this is Noah from Chicago, Illinois. So where does this season rank on all-time seasons of Survivor? And how about for seasons with only new players? Love to hear from you.
Josh, I know there's been a lot of hyperbole kicked around the morning after the finale. I have seen top five season. I have seen best season ever.
Yeah.
I mean, that I know you have never done an official season rank, and I'm certainly not asking you to right at this moment.
Certainly won't do it anyway. Yeah.
In terms of a ballpark, do you have a sense of where this season ultimately lands?
I think it's pretty clearly top half for sure.
Top half.
I think it's.
Do you think, is it a top 10 season?
I think you could debate it. I think you could argue it. I want to let it marinate a little bit before I say anything so hyperbolic. I mean, I am myself prone to hyperbole, so I'm trying to check myself here. Mm-hmm. It has a really marvelous story. It has a marvelous winner story.
Mm-hmm.
It has terrific characters, really, really excellent cast. And the way that the game was played, it was so refreshing. It was just a really, really wonderful game of Survivor. In terms of like games of Survivor, if this distinction makes sense, like seasons versus like the game that was actually played, like the season being like the television product, the viewing experience, all of that versus the actual game that was played out there and the spirit of the game. The spirit of the game that was played for Millennials versus Gen X is very high on the list for me.
Mm-hmm.
Extraordinarily high on the list for me. As a season, I would you know, be cautious of really, you know, staking a claim of how high up that would be, but also very good.
The only things that I would knock it for, and I think we talked about this on the Wiggle Room the other day, I think
pre-merge.
The pre-swap, pre-merge, those first four episodes, I think, are really not great.
It's also very white. This is very dude-heavy post-merge, and mm-hmm. it'd be nice to see some diversity have gotten into
there.
Sure,
but I don't ultimately say, like, okay, well, this merge had so much diversity. This is one of the best seasons.
Sure.
I look at it by the content of the characters that are out there. So ultimately, I feel like that it's a really, you know, really strong. I feel like that just like that, you know, morning after, I'd say maybe somewhere between 5 and 10, I think. But probably not top five, baby.
I don't think it's top five, baby, for me. But between 5 and 10, I could certainly see the argument. And if you were walking away from this season saying that this is top five, baby, for you, I saw Alex Wilpon said the best season of all time.
Yeah.
If that's how you're feeling.
Admitted Adam Klein, super duper fan.
Yes. If that's how you feel, that's great. That's awesome. Good for you. I'm really glad that you enjoyed the season that much. I loved this season.
I
had a really good time with this season. I thought that this was a very, very fun season of the show. Not ready to declare where it falls, but I could not be mad at a top 10.
Okay. I know you wanted to marinate on the season rankings. Here is something else that maybe you might want to marinate on during the Survivor off season.
Yo, this one's for Josh.
Oh, no.
Why are you talking about my sister, bro? Why are you talking about my family too? You better bring a shovel to our next pizza date. You're getting buried.
No one needs Nick Majorano in this podcast. No one asked for that. You could have just played that off the air.
What is
and
he
we
talking about? Well, what is he talking about? You're his sister.
Well, this is a very weird thing that happened. If you've been listening to The Wiggle Room, you know that Nick and I have been feuding a little bit. That we had these wonderful pizza dates that took a turn after Nick pitched the cancellation of The Wiggle Room to be replaced by The Mayo Jar. I did not care for that. I was not a fan of that. But the truth is that secretly, Nick and I love each other tremendously. Oh. We have a great relationship. Things are great. But Neil Gottlieb was in town. Ice Cream Man Neil Gottlieb was in town this past week for the finale. I got to hang out with him a little bit. He and Nick also have sort of a public feud slash showmance type of thing. And we thought it'd be fun to send a picture to Nick of Neil in my arms, me cradling him like a small child, even though Neil is a much larger man than I am, and I felt impressive that I could hold him for as long as I did.
Wow.
And I thought that we were just going to do that as like a private gag, and then Neil Gottlieb tweeted that I had whispered in Neil's ear that I'm only getting close to Nick Majorano to get close to his sister. And
you were
a pawn
in his game.
I thought that was kind of weird. And I tried to spin it by saying, by the way, his sister is the name of a prestigious pizzeria that is owned by the Majorano crime syndicate.
So I
guess that's where Nick is coming from. That was a lot of explanation for a thing that we really don't need to talk about during this finale recap. Yeah. So we can scoot right past that.
Some other highlights from your night. You want to talk about anything?
Yeah, of course. I think that would be fun. I got to hang out with Ken from Gabon. Which will make Mark Solera and Owen Craig very happy to know that Ken and I had a great time together. Ken is one of the Survivor players who has actually listened to a little bit of our audiobook. Rob, he listened to the Gabon chapter of The Evolution of Strategy. And if you have listened to that chapter, then you know I'm not especially kind towards Ken. Mm-hmm. kind of mean towards Ken. And he is a really good sport about it. And we had a fun conversation about Final Fantasy, Rob. So the bridge has been mended. And Ken and I are now buddies. I'm excited about this.
That's good. Also, from the after party, we saw a lot of people from the cast were there. Although I think a couple of the finalists, I saw
Will's cousin at the bar because Will, of course, himself could not make it.
Yes.
Will's cousin was there.
Will's cousin was there. Yeah. Most of the people from the cast, and then a lot of alumni were out and about.
And there's like an especially momentous pairing that you happened to witness.
Which one? Shane and Suri?
That would be the one.
Yeah. So it's great. I actually saw Shane Powers at a Survivor event.
Yeah.
And he was just like, can you effing believe that I'm here right now? Do you know how effing crazy this is that I'm here? Do you understand the significance of that? But he was just, I think he'll just go anywhere that Suri is.
Still high on his own supply, as Nick Iadanza might say.
Well, speaking of Australian Survivor, the toast of the finale week was that the great, hold on. Spoiler alert. I'm going to be spoiling
Australian Survivor. The winner Australian Survivor's name is
spoiler
about to be name
alert.
Checked.
Spoiler
so
alert.
Skip forward 2 minutes if you have not watched Australian Survivor and plan to. This is an extended spoiler alert so that you have plenty of time to reach into your pocket and skip ahead 2 minutes.
Yes.
Now it is done.
Okay, so the winner of Australian Survivor, Christy, was there.
Yes, not Christy Smith.
Yeah, oh, she was ready to give me an earful.
Yeah, she... Well, so what happened? First off, not to bury the lead, Rob, you were in terrific form at this after party. I had been, you know, one of my missions throughout this finale party was to find you because I couldn't see you anywhere. And when I did finally catch you, Rob, I said, Rob, how are you doing? You go, I'm pretty drunk. And this was the default line that Rob gave to everybody who said, how are you, Rob? Rob would just go, I'm drunk. It was great. It was great. It was like you were just a wonderful college kid.
I was very happy to go back to that college kid metaphor, that I felt like my finals were over. And I had hired someone to edit the video that I basically felt like that I was ready to sort of like, okay, I've done my work here, and now it's all in other people's hands to, you know, the great Scott St. Pierre was handling the audio.
Indeed.
Somebody I hired off Craigslist was handling the video. video. And then, but I felt at that point that I was going to be in good hands with everything. And very quickly, Scott St. Pierre, boom, was able to get the audio up. Yes. And that was great. And I felt like everything was going my way. And then, you know, I was like, hey, let me let loose yeah. here a little bit. And then,
cut a rug, yes.
Yes. Australian Survivor Christy got a hold of me.
Just glommed
and she
onto
was
you.
Waiting.
Yes.
She had been waiting to give me an earful.
And what did that look like
in terms of my coverage yeah. of Australian Survivor?
Yeah, and she really gave an earful to, or at least you know, went finger rockets towards Stephen Fishback.
Yes.
Too.
Well, then I saw Josh, and after a lengthy conversation with Australian Survivor Christy, I said, "Oh, look, there's Stephen Fishback right over there. Go. Why don't you go talk to Stephen Fishback?"
Rob pointing to me as though I am Stephen Fishback, and. Christy just like turns and gives me like this exorcist stare and then very slowly, methodically just like flips off both birds at me and just like twirls them like this sorceress, like Enchantress from Suicide Squad or like the Scarlet Witch or something. And I was like, I'm not Stephen Fishback. And she like kept coming closer being like, I think you are. And just like Rob, what have you gotten me into? So I took a bullet for you, Fish. Never say I'd never do anything for you.
But no, she was great and ultimately a good sport.
Yeah.
About everything. Sure. Because we were hard on...
I don't...
You were hard. You stopped watching.
I know. It wasn't her fault, though.
Yeah, at least Stephen and I finished the season.
Yeah. Yeah, it wasn't my fault.
Yeah. But then she gets the last laugh. Mm. Because ultimately, then, you know, I got back to my house and I got ready for bed and I got in bed and then, you know, I think for whatever reason, the lovely first lady of podcasting was rather salty. For whatever reason, you know, like, for me, this was like, I was at my office Christmas party.
Fair enough.
You know,
Richard
Hatch, worst movie ever on
that's
Facebook.
I saw that.
Yeah. And so I felt like this was like sort of like my, like I go out what, maybe five nights a year tops.
Yeah. Leave your apartment 7 days
and,
a year.
And that counts maybe two know-it-alls yeah. also along the way.
Right.
And so I felt like I was at a work function and I came home and Nicole was, as I got into bed, she's like, are you drunk? And I very truthfully said, yes.
Yes, well, this was your line of the night. You were being very open about this.
And
you were like Adam Klein with the honesty of how drunk you were.
And it's so just keeping with the theme of the backlash that I've taken on Instagram, I had posted a picture with Australian Survivor Christy. I said, oh, here's my new BFF at. I don't recall her handle. And I just woke up at 5:30 in the morning to Nicole yelling, so who's your new best friend? Oh. Who is this? And I just responded, she was the worst winner of Australian Survivor.
No, don't say that on the record. You just mended fences with Christy.
I'm just trying to explain to my wife what this gag is. Mm. And I'm not having an affair with, and then I'm posting on Instagram, hey, everybody, look who I'm having an affair with. Like, what is the thought process there? And she's like, and just so you know, you still have to wake up with the kids this morning.
Oh, my gosh.
I was like, I went to bed like 3 hours ago. Why do I not? Is there no leeway here for this?
Mm, all right. Well, so
sorry. That's why I'm a little cranky today.
Well, this right here is me. I'm just going to say words that don't actually mean anything. It's just like kind of idle filter so that you can gather your thoughts for the next thing that you want to say, because I'm not going to get in the middle of this and I don't want to weigh in on anything that you just said other than to say I wish nothing but the best for everyone in this house.
All right, Josh, let's start to, So I was commending all of our voicemailers and our callers for not just exclusively talking about Survivor 34, but we did get a tease about to what's to come. And I felt like this is like The Price is Right. And considering that a lot of these people were on The Price is Right earlier this year, it was like, come on down.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was so excited about the people. So who was there last night? Who came out on the stage to announce the great season 34, the game changer?
Yeah. Game changes. Yeah. Who did they lead? I mean, Ty was there. Beast.
I don't remember the order. Yeah.
I don't remember the order too. Ty came out. Ty was very embarrassed about this later. I mean, you saw it on the show. Like he has like his shirt like pulled up halfway up his chest. He's like, oh no, he did not like that.
Yeah.
Ceri was there. Sandra is there, of course.
I did talk to Ty at the party.
Oh yeah, Ty's the best. He is really the sweetest man on the planet.
Yes. I actually talked to Ty. I was going into the bathroom and he was coming out and we were talking and he's like, come on, let's just talk in the bathroom.
There
like
you go.
We had like guy talk.
Yeah.
In the
toilet.
Yeah. Just like it was just like having, and then Taylor came in. It was just me and Ty just chatting away, and then Taylor came in. And
did he join the conversation?
Sure.
Tony was there. Tony was called on stage.
Team TV
is
so happy.
Returning to Survivor.
And
this
actually,
is incredible news.
Just to honor.
Yeah, I think you just need to say it.
The amazing occasion.
Needs to be said.
It's huge. I needed this.
We all did.
Ooh.
Ooh. Yes. Yeah, it's huge. Yeah. Ceri, Sandra,
yeah, there's some
Sierra
heavy,
was there.
There's some heavy hitters on this upcoming season.
I actually passed them on the lot that they were. They had a bunch of them there. They were playing the games. They showed the clip of it, and as they were watching the thing in like a different trailer,
yeah,
or anything. I have never met Tony before in person, and
Tony's
I sort
fun.
Of I just like came up behind him and I was like, oh hey, Team TV, can I just say hi real quick? And he's like, oh okay, and then you know he did, it took him like a couple seconds to process that it was
Rock and Rob.
Yeah, that it was me. It's like, oh hey,
Rock and Rob.
Yeah, he was it was just really excited just to see those guys.
Yeah. What's your hype level for the Game Changers?
Get hype. So hype. Well, okay, and that's actually a good note. One of the things that I want to be doing as we get ahead into this Survivor 34 preseason in the new year,
yeah.
One of the things that I want to do, I know, and you've done such great work in your preseason coverage, and you know, obviously, you know, I didn't talk to anybody before they went out there for season 34, but what I want to do is talk to the ultimate super fan expert of each of the Survivor 34 players.
Nice.
And so what I am allowing our listeners to do and our community of podcast fans, I have set up a page where I am trying to track down the ultimate super fan of each of the Game Changers.
Mm.
And I want to do like a 30-minute chat with each of them as sort of our preseason coverage. And so I'm going to make that link and put that link out there. If you are the ultimate expert and willing to do a full rewatch of every episode that your favorite Game Changer has played in, and then come on here and also listen to every appearance that they've made on this podcast.
Uh-huh.
And I want to talk about their best moments. I want to talk about their worst moments. I want to talk about things that they have talked to me about things that they would do in future seasons. You have to have a full willingness to do a deep dive on your person. Go to robisawebsite.com/S34expert. And in the new year, we will start coordinating those interviews. And then once they announce the full cast that's going to happen, then we'll start maybe like two in an episode. And very excited. So robisawebsite.com/S34expert.
I am very excited about this. I'm very excited about season 34 preseason content in general, Rob.
Yeah.
Perhaps I shall have a treat at robhasawebsite.com/parade, which is the link to my parade articles.
Yes.
But if you liked my second chance preseason stuff, perhaps I will have a few treats for you in the new year.
Wow.
Just throwing that out there.
It's amazing.
Just a mayhaps.
Jeff Probst talked to Dalton Ross a little bit, went a little bit in depth. Did you catch any of that?
In depth. I like that. That's a pun, right? That's an ocean pun. Yeah, because Jeff was talking about Jeff and Dalton did an interview. Dalton posted it this morning. We were recording this on Thursday, of course, and likened the pace, the tone and sort of the pace of the season is Jaws-like. Do you have the exact quote, Rob?
Yeah, that Jeff said that the new season is fascinating. And Jeff says, I anticipated a bloodbath out of the gate. And instead, it's more like the movie Jaws. It felt like all 20 people were looking at each other saying, we know the shark is in the water. when is it going to hit the boat? When is it going to attack the boat? And so it has a very uneasy feeling in the beginning as people aren't sure what to do, which is really interesting because on the surface, you would think that these are game players. I guess not game changers. So Jeff Probst says the next season of Survivor is like the movie Jaws. Really?
Wow. It's scary. There's something in the water. It's getting closer.
Oh my God. I can't believe it. It's a spy shark.
A spy shark is here.
Yes.
Oh my God. Do you think that
call Tom Westman?
Oh my
is God. Tom Westman a game changer?
He'd be pretty good.
Yes.
Yeah.
Richard Hatch, get him in out there.
Yeah, he would be a great Richard Hatch Dreyfus.
Richard Hatch Dreyfus.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm into Survivor Jaws. That sounds good. I'm up for spy sharks.
Yeah.
That sounds great.
Boy.
I got to imagine that, you know, Tony's thinking about that. He's thinking about how he can use the marine life to spy on people. And a spy shark would definitely be an evolution of his game.
Didn't they have that on Lost, Josh? Didn't they have a spy shark?
They did have a shark that I don't believe was a spy. But I did spy a shark on Lost.
And they have a Dharma shark There's that was Dharma spying shark. On people.
There's a Dharma shark.
Yes.
Indeed.
Yes. I know that Shut Up Tim is also very excited about the next season of Survivor, that he has even has a working theme song for the next season of Survivor.
Oh, yeah.
Game ch-ch-ch-changers. Ozzy changed the game. Game ch-ch-changers. At least we'll get to see Tony again. Game ch-ch-changers. Beast mode. Oh my God.
Hasn't David Bowie been through enough this year?
Oh, it's been rough one. It's been a rough one. And I'm moving away from the music parodies anyway, Rob. It's just something that I've decided I need to do. And this just confirms it. Not as a knock against Shut Up Tim, but because I also had been thinking of this exact song. For Game Changers, which means I'm out of original ideas and I'm just going to let Shut Up Tim take it over. I think Wanda's going to sit out of Game Changers. We'll see when she comes back up.
Yes.
Yes.
Also, one other programming note before we do a little social media, that Stephen Fishback and I are working on something, a big surprise that we're dropping on Monday for you guys.
Well,
it's nothing like Jaws. Yeah. Yeah. It's nothing like Jaws, but looking forward to that.
Seems and of extreme.
Course, yes. It should be. It should be. We still have a ways to go, but yes. Very excited about all of that coming up on Monday. Something fun for you guys for the off season. And also next week, David Bloomberg is going to be coming back through here to talk about why Adam won and by proxy, why everybody else lost. So look for that coming up on Tuesday. And of course, as you guys are getting ready this weekend with the holiday shopping, 12 days of deals still going on the Amazon.com. Rob has a website.com/Amazon. You ready for the final time, Josh, to talk social media in season 33?
Of course.
Take it away. Great. Ryan Elder.
Tweets, baby, tweets. Survivor tweets. They're better than reaching the end of a great season 33. Tweets.
Yeah.
I met Ryan Elder last night. That dude's awesome.
He is awesome.
Ryan Elder's the man.
I escaped the room with him on Monday with the tabulator.
The outcome, so you made it.
Yeah.
You got it. Of course. I mean, you were with the tabulator. Of course, you escaped the room.
Yes.
30-10, I believe, is his record.
30-10 in the tabulator.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
That is for this. Yeah. Fantastic. That's fantastic. Yeah. All right. Some tweets from last night. Sophie Clark, she tweeted, with that move, I'm rooting for Ken. One move at the right time. Take notes, millennials.
I hear what she's saying. I get that. I'm still rooting for Adam, but I understand the point.
Yeah. Sophie throwing some shade at Big Pharma, like Bernie Sanders. She said, Adam just won $1 million and is donating $100K. Bristol Myers Squibb has a market cap of $97.8 billion and is also donating $100,000.
Wow.
Yeah. Sophie.
Yeah.
She's...
I'm just going to say words that just kind of fill up the dead air, and you can gather your thoughts and move on to the next.
So that is really so you are you have the same level of concern of angering Bristol Myers Squibb as my wife. those are equal things for you.
Yeah, that's about it. That's right.
Yeah,
that's correct.
All right,
I just don't want to choose sides.
Yes. So Stephen Fishback tweeted out, "We're in the midst of the evolution of Survivor strategy at Round Howard." just swooned.
I mean, what happened was, so Zeke says that on the show, and I'm in the crowd, and I'm so far away from you, Rob, and it really sucked to be so far away from you in that moment. But I just, like, shot back up across the theater and just, like, looked at you to do my fist pump, but I couldn't see you. I couldn't see you there. But I didn't swoon, but I was very, very, very excited. Also, my legs started vibrating uncontrollably because everyone was tweeting me about it.
You were getting so many tweets at the moment.
It's happening, yes.
Okay. Did you talk to Penner last night?
No, I did not talk to Penner. I've never met Penner before. I went to talk to Hannah for a second. I had a thing to tell Hannah, and I poked her arm to be like, hey, whenever you're done with your current conversation, I'd love to say something to you. And the person that she was standing next to said, do you mind? We're exchanging phone numbers here. I was like, oh, okay, sorry. And I walked away, and then when I turned around, I saw that that man, in fact, was Jonathan Penner. I did not recognize him because Jonathan Penner's civilian hair is very different from his survivor hair.
Yeah.
He looks like a completely different human being.
He was hanging with Sandra.
Yeah. Well, who wouldn't want to hang with Sandra?
Yeah. And I saw him. I shook his hand, and then he was walking, and Sandra was going the other way. Yeah. And yeah, but Penner and Sandra were like the bizarro Shane and Suri.
That's fun. I like that.
They were just like attached at the hip.
I don't know which one.
And
I
he's
would,
like, yeah. I have to go. I'm off with her.
That's tough to like choose. Like if it was like the end of The Good Son and you could only pull up one of those pairings over the cliff. Sorry to spoil the end of The Good Son.
For yeah. What's up?
By
with
the
that?
Way, Macaulay Culkin is not the child who is chosen. Elijah Wood is the one that they choose to save. Just to really commit to the
flame
spoiler.
Josh Wiggler.
If you had to pull up like the pair of Shane and Suri or the pair of Penner and Sandra, I have no idea what I would do. Cause like on one level, it's so exciting to see the Shane and Suri reunion, but we've seen it before. Whereas the Sandra Penner team up, that sounds like that would be legendary. That'd be great.
Yeah. Penner also said, OMG, is this the greatest show in the history of TV?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's close.
It's a really
good
show.
A fantastic show.
Yeah.
It's the best.
Yeah. Penner was really, he was the whole thing. He was just, he loved it. He said, I love this so much. Incredible gameplay, idols, advantages, just fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I feel like Brett was like giving me shades of Penner in this episode, in the finale. It's just like Brett being like incredulous of all the crazies and everybody. Like really, like you could have almost imagined if Brett himself wasn't the one getting faded, mm-hmm. like you could imagine him like being really annoyed with these millennials
this
faded.
Whole thing. All these millennials that they're just a bunch of crazy
bunch
people.
Of
like, I can't even explain what's going on out here. It's just a bunch of crazy people.
Right. Like turn this season into a season that had like three or like two or three returning players, like a Gen X captain and a millennial captain.
There's another idol. Yeah. I don't even know where they get all these idols. Like Penner, I would go to the idol shop if they had one.
Penner very easily could have played the part of Brett LaBelle on this season. And like things still play out exactly perfectly.
Yeah. Randy Bailey was tweeting.
How did Randy's enterprise go?
I don't think great. They don't put as many tweets up on the screen as they do on Big Brother.
Yeah.
He said, am I the only one that wants no one to win tonight? Wow.
Yeah, I think probably you're up there. I think that you got to be on a little bit of an island there because most people that I talked to were like, hey, this is a phenomenal Final Six.
Randy was also tweeting about how he couldn't believe who would actually play a fake idol.
That's really good.
Yeah,
that's great. Some sympathy for that.
Russell Hance, that he was live tweeting
is
the
he
finale
upset about the Game Changers. Gotta be right.
Yeah. He said,
really at Jeff Probst Game Changers. You guys are really pushing it. LOL.
Mm.
Yes.
Sounds like somebody's a little jealous.
He says, this list is very confusing. I'm not saying that they shouldn't have brought these people back, but they should have named it something else.
It might be something.
He might have something there. He might have something there.
Might be something to that.
Yeah. He said, I guess I wasn't big enough game changer, LOL.
No, but you've done other things.
In fairness to Russell, I would say that I would give like sign off on Russell Hant's Game Changer.
I mean, sure, as a concept, yeah.
Yeah. Maybe they're saving me for a Beauty and the Beast season with @#Figgy, LOL, # I'm game.
Oh, of course you're game. No one's surprised to hear that. And this is Russell's game. He's trying to pull the Michaela Wingle on Figgy. Michaela Fingle.
That's disgusting.
Yeah, speaking of Michaela, that's Delilah.
Miss Cuddleshag.
Yes, yeah. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, stop that. I mean, now they like, what? He's going to be the new Taylor. This is terrible. This is the worst.
And then he tweeted at at hashtag Figgy. Do I have to ask? Dot, dot, dot. Okay, follow me.
Oh, God.
Smiley emoticon.
Oh, God. It's so gross. It's so gross. He's the worst. Sorry. Sorry to all of you who love wrestling.
Wouldn't that be a turn in the Figgy and Taylor saga?
Yes.
If then...
A hard turn off is what that would be, Rob. Extraordinary turn off.
Let's see. What would you call... I mean, if Figgy and Taylor was Figtails, what would be Figgy Fance. And Russell?
Fance.
Fance?
Yeah. Sweet, sweet fantasy baby.
Yes.
Yeah. Riggy.
Yeah.
Higgy.
I talked to Figgy for a little bit last night. Very nice.
She had a nice coat on, I saw.
Yes. Okay.
Very furry.
Very furry?
Furry Figgy.
Yeah, furry coat. Okay. And then, Josh, you are in for a treat today because a couple other people were live tweeting the finale. Both Rupert and the Rupert bot.
Tweets wow. Baby tweets Rupert. Tweets that are better than something that happened on Survivor. Rupert tweet.
Yes.
You know what I really liked this week,
What's
Rob?
That?
What I really liked this week was that Rupert made it into the Survivor Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm.
And rather than participate in an exit interview with Gordon Holmes, he clearly sent the Rupert bot to answer the questions. Read that interview with Gordon Holmes. That is the Rupert bot. That is not actually a real human being that is responding to these questions.
All right. Rupert bot and Rupert were both live tweeting the finale. I will give you a best of seven. Okay. I'll give you a tweet. You tell me who said it. Okay. Was it who tweeted it? Was it Rupert Boneham or the Rupert bot?
Okay, let's do
okay?
it. Yes.
Number one, every one of us stink like insane ladies.
Okay.
Who tweeted that?
That is the Rupert bot.
Rupert.
That is not a human being.
That is the Rupert bot?
Yeah.
And I will say...
Ding, ka-ching, ka-ching. Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, there's no context for that. I don't know why Rupert would be talking about why he smells so bad. Just completely unprompted.
Yes.
I don't know why he would do it.
Yeah, that's a fair point. That's a fair point. But I think he was onto something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Number two.
Okay.
It's happy to see someone that appreciates the immunity. Hashtag loyalty to none.
Hashtag Rupert bot.
Rupert bot?
Yeah. It's happy.
Yeah, you might be too good for this.
It's ding, happy. Ka-ching, ka-ching.
It's happy to see.
I mean, I feel like that kind of made sense.
I mean, I'm not accusing, you know, Rupert of being like a master of the English language, but I feel like he's better than that. That sounds like a robot to me.
Number three.
Yes.
Delicious. That's a lot of meat.
You know what? I'm going to say that I think that that's Rupert. I think that that's Rupert. I think that's the real Rupert. I think that he saw those steaks, and I think that he greatly admired the quality of the beef.
Ding, ka-ching, yes. Ka-ching. Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
All right. Like, yes. Much like Adam Klein, Josh Wiggler is going for the clean sweep here.
Yeah.
All right. Who tweeted last night, follow my Facebook page? I will have some cool Facebook Live stuff coming up.
That's Rupert as well. That's a real, I mean, that's a real set of statements. Those are real.
Ding, ka-ching, ka-ching.
Okay, so.
I wonder what's going to be on his Facebook Live.
See, I think what we need, you're too good at this.
Well, I think
you're too good at this because I think that really what we need is.
We need to perfect the Rupert bot technology.
Yes.
You know, we're working on it. It's happening. It's, you know, this machine will be fine-tuned at one point.
Yes. Rupert bot also said, Brett just looked at me and said, great words. It's blessed us with so many.
I love the Rupert bot. Yeah. The Rupert bot is one of the great things that came out of this season.
Also, I think that the Rupert bot might have been trying to pick a fight with the Hans bot. He said,
ooh.
Russell, if they really thought anything about they would have seen that reward with your wife.
Wow.
What did you say about my wife?
Figbot.
Figbot.
That's my wife.
How dare you, Rupert? Your programming is flawed.
I'm really looking forward to Survivor Robot Island when all of these Twitter bots go out there.
Hans World, I think, is what they're calling it.
West Nail World.
Over at West Nail World.
Yes.
I do think West World with Survivors, Josh. You go to the West World with Survivors.
Yeah.
Okay. West One World, they call it.
Yes.
And you go there and then you just play the game out. You're not killing people, but it's like you're on the, you know, this Parvati bot, a Hans bot, Rupert bot, and you're all there, and you just play, like a Survivor game. You're on the tribe with them.
Yeah, that
maybe it doesn't
fun.
Last 39 days. Maybe they sort of like abbreviate it.
Okay, I'm into it. I like it.
Yeah, I think it really solves a lot of the problems. There's a Jeff Probst bot.
Yeah,
yeah,
a Jeffrey Wright bot.
Yes, yeah. All good. All right, Josh, what's the hashtag today?
Oh, I mean, Spy Shark was awesome.
Spy Shark, Richard Hatch Dreyfuss.
That was good. Big Bot was a late entry. You know, any one of those. I think Spy
Adam Incline.
Adam Incline is good. I love Spy Shark so much. That makes me laugh a lot.
Okay, that's great. Yeah. All right, Josh, so many fantastic things coming up.
Yeah. Well, I'm almost done with the exit interviews. As of this recording, I still have to release my Brett LaBelle interview, which was...
Oh, come on! Why do I gotta be last?
Well, we talked for the longest. It was a long interview.
Hold on. I got a new Josh Wiggler impression.
Yeah.
No. I'm not done yet. Hold Brett.
It's a good impression. Yeah. I like it. So I got to work on that. Otherwise, the other five interviews, they are up on parade.com. And as mentioned earlier, there's the fast link to get to all that stuff is robhasawebsite.com/parade.
All right. This is very exciting as we head into the offseason. First off, Josh, let me thank you for an amazing season of podcasting once again. Thank you.
Ooh, mon pleasure.
Yes. Of course, there's no time like the offseason to catch up on the evolution of strategy. We have all the first 30 seasons of Survivor, and we take one step closer to Evolution Strategy Volume 4 as we put another season into the books.
Yeah, into the audiobooks.
Into the audiobooks. We're closing in.
We're getting closer.
That summer of 2020 is coming.
Oh my God, there are so many reasons why I'm looking forward to 2020, Rob.
Yes.
That is high on the list.
That's one of the reasons.
That's one of the reasons. Not the number one reason, but
one of the reasons. It's up there.
Yes.
So looking forward to all of that. Evolutionstrategy.com. You can hear all about Richard Hatch Dreyfuss.
Yeah, he'll be making a return appearance for sure.
Yeah. That's all exciting coming up. And of course, if you want to be a part of the season 34 preview here that we're doing on Rob Has a Podcast, if you think you are the ultimate expert on one of the game changers and are willing to do a full rewatch of all of their seasons and RHAP episodes, then go to robhasawebsite.com/S34expert. There's some questions that we want to know from you, whether or not that you are the right person, and we will pick the perfect person for each of the game changers.
Do not apply unless you are committed.
Yes. And
you need to this is going to be work.
Right. It's going to be work.
It's not just fun and games, though. There will be that as well.
And the great Ali Giancola is helping me out once again going through all of this casting for this. And she was such a big help on So You Think You Can Podcast. So thanks again to Ali. And Josh, I mean, I think that's it for our season 33 proper. I'm hoping to, do some long form interviews in the new year. We'll have some other
our future know-it-all substitute, David Wright.
Oh, what a great person on the. I mean, we've got a deep bench now. Between Kim and Sophie.
That's a great addition to the roster.
The winners, though.
Yeah.
They make us look stupid and bad.
Yeah.
But David is going to fit right in.
Yeah, he'll be really at home. He'll
yes,
be great.
Yes,
yeah.
All fun stuff. All right, follow Josh on Twitter. He's at Round Howard. Again, you got that holiday shopping coming up. robhasawebsite.com/Amazon. So many great deals. And the 12 days of deals still going on. And to take us out, Josh, I have a original song. We've heard so many song parodies in 2016. An original song all about Survivor Millennials versus Gen X by the great Aaron Robertson with help from Ryan Elder. Take it away, Aaron.
We're back with vengeance. Jump. My name is Double A to the R-O-N. Survivor Double 3's just about to end. And before I begin, yeah. The quest to win a million. I'm music tone, grab me your millennial verse Gen X. It's up and in your battle to make a toe shatter. Like a typhoon, we're coming in to take your eyes out. Trappers love goggles making guys down. The class between Takali and Vanua. Stare downs over at Ikabula. David beat Goliath, but Adam was the ruler. And now he's stacking all the moolah. But look at me now. Finding nettles here, even thick ones on the ground. Michelle's like the Luna Lugger to my friend Weasley. Controller, type of protein, hunting, ghost is never easy.
Get Vicky with it. Get Vicky with it. Get Vicky with it. Get Vicky with it.
Yo, 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 check this out. I'm about to say my own name, right? Yeah, Ryan Elder. Yo, let me start my verse with a note to Sunday Burquist. Took a shot and missed, but she ain't done no way. Cause I don't place my bets just on any given Sunday. She's a Gen X G.I.S. A Midwest badass, so you know she's too modest. Slinging sick bluffs, ain't nothing you can do. Taking Adam and Hannah to Sunday school. Now let me finish my verse with more love for Sunday Burquist. That's right, I insist. She ain't no background player, she's the millennial Slayer, the Svengali from Takali, ain't nobody gonna betray her. And just when you think you got her, you got her. She's up at tribal council eating sheep to slaughter. So when she stabs you in the back sight unseen, you'll be jumping out your chair shouting, yes, queen.
There were times when generations came together. They braved high votes, rock draws, and the weather. Zeke and Brett, Ken and Hannah, ooh yeah. We found our answer, so let's stand up to cancer.
Dance! Get Biggie with it! Get Biggie with it! Get Biggie with it! Get Biggie with it!
Apparently, you, spelled Y-O-U, by the way, would rather listen to this remix on your MP whatever device than enjoy the sweet sound of Frank Sinatra on vinyl. Damn millennials. Well, Sir Squiddington and I don't care. We believe in honor and integrity.
You don't get it.
You've got to dig harder, got to dig deeper. You were the legacy receiver. Throw your hands up, I won't be your deceiver. This one is a keeper, so just let loose and
dance. Get Biggie with it, sprinkler. Get Biggie with it,
nay nay.
Get Biggie with it, get Biggie with it,
do the worm.
Get Biggie with it,
do some dash.
Get Biggie with it,
tweet baby tweet.
Get Biggie with it.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yeah, we did it again. Robertson, Elder, Kalish. Our initials spell R-E-K. We hope you got wrecked today.